helplessly, piteously appealed to Kamsa, "My dear brother, all good fortune unto you. Don't kill this girl. She will be your daughter-in-law. Indeed, it is unworthy of you to kill a woman." Purport. Kamsa had previously excused Devaki because he thought that a woman should not be killed, especially when pregnant. But now, by the influence of Maya, he was prepared to kill a woman. Not only a woman, but a small, helpless newborn child. Devaki wanted to save her brother from this terrible, sinful act. Therefore, she told him, "Don't be so atrocious as to kill a female child. Let there be all good fortune for you. Demons can do anything for their personal benefit, not considering what is pious or vicious." But Devaki, on the contrary, although safe because she had already given birth to her own son Krishna, was anxious to save the daughter of someone else. This was natural for her. Obvious that one should not kill babies or women. Kamsa was unscrupulous. He had already had so many children killed. And Devaki was trying to save this female child. Just as it was seemingly natural for Kamsa to want to kill this child who he saw as death personified, so it was natural for Devaki to try to save the child, even though the child was not her child. But because she's described here as Devi, godly, saintly woman, whereas Kamsa has the distinction, or it might be called, of being one of the most famous demons in history. So they had a different outlook. Kamsa was a demon, there's no doubt. But you could say he was a straightforward demon. He didn't pretend not to be a demon. He was just an out-and-out demon, that's all. He had no qualms about ordering children to be killed, or even personally killing children, or even he was ready to kill even his own father and sister, brother-in-law, for the sake of political gain. He didn't attempt to justify it on any moral grounds. It was just might makes right. That I'm very powerful, and these persons are obstacles in the path of my political overlordship. Therefore, the easy way to get rid of this political problem is to kill them. Or this child is prophesied to be my future death, so let me kill. He didn't attempt to make any elaborate reasoning. His reasoning was very straightforward, and he was very clear about it, that I want what is best for me, according to my own understanding. So any obstacle in the path of my sense gratification should be removed by murder, if necessary. So he was a straightforward demon. Nowadays, we have seemingly very pious and moral demons. Devaki is saying, "Mahantam, Sriyang Mahantam, arahasi. It is not proper to kill a woman. Five classes of people, well, four plus cows, brahmanas, old men, women and children, plus cows, these are always deserving of protection. Although we do find in some places in the Vedic literature that even, it's not that women and brahmanas, etc., they have a full right just to do whatever they like and they won't be punished. There is punishment also for those who commit very, very sinful acts. But generally it's considered, because generally women are protected, they don't have, protected means there's restriction. They're not, women are protected, so one thing is they're not allowed just to go here and there as they like. Children also, they're supposed to be under the control of their parents. So if they do anything wrong, it's considered actually more the fault of those who should have been protecting them. Brahmanas also, they may be punished, but that won't be, generally that won't be done by the king, that will be done by the other brahmanas. They will prescribe some punishment. The worst punishment is driving them out of Brahminical society. Bahishkar, driving them out. No longer a brahmana. You go and be chandal to revoke their caste. That is the worst punishment. And cattle, cows, they're not to be punished in any circumstance. Children also. Now in the Western world they're making laws for punishment of children who are severe criminals. But I think down to that, from the age of 14 they can give, in some states, the severe sentence, maybe even death sentence, but because they have so many murders done by young children. Like from 14 years. Because they take drugs, and they want money for purchasing more drugs, they become addicted, then they can do anything. They can kill, they can steal. So they're attempting to solve the problem by, one approach is to give severe punishment to children practically. So the general rule is that women, children, old men, and brahmanas, they are not to be punished. It's the general rule, but they may, in the case of severe misbehavior, then they may also be punished. We find that the earth planet, she tried to avoid punishment from the hands of Maharaj Prithu on the claim that I am a woman. But he didn't accept that. He said, you may be a woman, but you're acting very wrongly. So you deserve to be punished. And later some compromise was made. But the general rule is there, that women are not to be killed. Who is to be killed? Killing, generally, killing, it's that is not good. But there may be some grounds for killing. In the fight which is conducted between Kshatriyas, then killing is considered glorious. That's not every day. That's an unusual circumstance. Not that the Kshatriyas, they're supposed to be fighting all the time, but when there's a need, then they shall fight, and in that fight, if they kill the enemy, or even if they're killed, that's considered glorious. But that's between Kshatriyas, men only. Not that women are sent to war. This very foolish idea in America they have that women should do exactly the same thing as men, so they're sent to fight wars. They don't have enough men in America that they have to send women. Anyway, why they're fighting in the first place, that's another question. But that fight will be between men, so one man may kill another man. Nowadays, war means you drop bombs on cities and you kill all the citizens. But that way, women, children, old men, cows, and there aren't any brahmanas, but all classes of people are killed wantonly. But actually, the fighting that should be just between a small section of the population, the kshatriyas. Not that everyone's involved. You drop bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and just people are sitting there in the morning eating with their chopsticks, and all of a sudden, no more chopsticks, no more rice. Or even, actually that's famous, but even worse, even more people were killed in the firebombing of Dresden in Germany at the end of the Second World War, when the German troops, they hadn't surrendered, but they were finished. There was no hope of them doing anything. There was no hope of the German troops surviving. The Russians were coming in from the east, and the British and Americans from the west, so they were finished. And thousands of people were pouring into the town of Dresden, and which was not at all a military target, but they firebombed it for non-stop, for hours and hours, till the whole city was just burning, and they killed hundreds of thousands of people. It's not so famous, but more people were killed in here for no reason. There was no military reason whatsoever. So, of course, this is a little bit of discussion of politics here, but America is very anxious that no one else should get nuclear bombs, because they consider others are irresponsible. But it was them only who dropped the bombs on Hiroshima. No one else ever did. And they only who firebombed Dresden and killed so many people. This is demoniac. So like I was saying, Kamsa, he was a demon, but he was a straightforward demon. But nowadays we find that wars which are fought ultimately for some political gain, they try to justify it in the name of democracy or humanitarianism, maintaining the peace. The British developed their empire saying that we have to civilize these people. You see, just like in India, the people are uncivilized because they don't eat beef. They're foolish. They don't drink wine. We have to civilize them. They're being misled by the brahmanas who tell them not to eat healthy food like beef and chicken and mutton. And they don't believe in Darwin's theory. They're uncivilized. We have to civilize them. So they're also demons. But they present themselves as being very noble. We're doing a very good thing. We're going to India. We're going to give them real civilization. Of course, they thought that the brown man can never become fully civilized like the white man, but at least somewhat they can become, at least they can become civilized enough to become our servants. So this is the hypocrisy that's going on. We can say that Kamsa, he was a demon. There's no doubt about it. But at least he wasn't a hypocrite. He was a demon and straightforward about it. Whereas in the modern age, so many demoniac things go on disguised as something good. And people are bewildered by this. Just like in the modern age, everyone thinks it's a very good thing to get your children well educated. But well educated means how to fill their head with all kinds of nonsense, all demoniac ideas. Man has descended from monkeys, and it's very important to get a university degree, otherwise you're not a fully civilized human being. And of course you must speak in English, otherwise you're not really a human being at all. and all these wrong ideas. And even among our devotees, they think that, well, the most important thing is to get my children a good degree and then, and also chant Hare Krishna. That's also a good thing. So, not understanding the real value of life, very concerned with social respectability measured in demoniac terms, actually. So, oh, my son is a doctor, very well trained, or my daughter, gynecologist, she's making good money with her own clinic, performing 20 abortions a day. But people think this is quite normal. You see, here it said, it's not good to kill the child. But in modern India, it's considered very good. It's very good. You're controlling the population. It's very good. You're doing a very good thing. And it's very good to note that India is one of the leading beef exporting countries in the world. You see, India is becoming very progressive and advanced. Of course, there are these foolish people who protest against it, but never mind. Open a new slaughterhouse and develop the economy. It's very important to develop the economy. Never mind that we're building factories and Ganga and Yamuna are being polluted, but even the slaughterhouse water is going in the Ganga. But this is all good. This is for development of the economy, which is the most important thing. Because when we have more money, then we can go to discos and have illicit sex, and we can eat more meat, and we can drink wine and real Scotch whiskey instead of Indian whiskey. And this is the advancement of civilization. And people think, yes, this is very good. This is real. Now we are actually cultured. The British did a good thing. They came to India. They taught us English. They taught us how to wear pants and shirts. And although our ladies, they're a little slow to catch on, but there's still some of them wearing saris. But as soon as possible, they should all wear tight jeans and tight t-shirts and become just like the prostitutes in the West. Of course, we don't call them prostitutes, but that's what they are. You're not supposed to say this kind of thing, but actually it's a fact. So this is all going on in the name of progress and advancement of civilization. So in this way, Kamsa was better. At least he was a straightforward demon. He didn't say that I'm interested in the people. We're doing things for the benefit of the country. He never said such a thing. Just I'm doing it for the benefit of me. He was straightforward about it. Therefore, we have to see through the eyes of Shastra. If we don't see through the eyes of Shastra, then we'll see through the eyes of some demons. Because Mahajano Yena Gata Sapanta, everyone is following the path of the Mahajans. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur commenting on this verse, or Prabhupada actually extrapolated from this, that most people are followers. Very few people are real leaders. Actually, the only real leader is Krishna, and everyone is following Krishna. Manusha Pata Sarvashaha. Everyone is following Krishna, but some follow Krishna directly. Directly means through the parampara system, through the Mahajans, or indirectly through Maya. So Maya has, there are the Mahajans, Dvadash Mahajan, Swayambhu, Narada, Shambhu, so all the 12 Mahajans. And these are some selected names, but all genuine devotees are Mahajans, great personalities. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has spoken of Nityananda Mahajan. So any great devotee is a Mahatma Mahajan. But the demons, they also have their Mahajans. For the Rakshasas, Ravan is a Mahajan. For the anthropologists, Darwin is a Mahajan. For the demons, Daityas, Hiranyakashipu is a Mahajan. He had his followers. It wasn't that everyone was against him. He had so many followers among the demons. Many famous demons, their names you can find listed then. Hitler, the German people, and they followed him. There are very few Germans who didn't follow him. They all thought, yes, he's right. You see, the Jews have done so much damage, and we need to follow Hitler. Hitler will make our country strong. And he did, by the grace of Maya. Of course, everything got smashed in the end. But they considered, yes, Heil Hitler. Have you seen? He's a very charismatic figure. He got all the people to... They all agreed. They all agreed to go to war. It's not very pleasant to go to war. You can watch in the movies if you want to waste your time. You can go to the movie and you see people shooting each other. Of course, in the movies, there's ridiculous things. Someone gets shot 50 times and bombs thrown on him, and he just wipes his forehead and gets up and goes on fighting. But it's all nonsense. But in real life, this fighting in the war, it's horrible. You know, you're charging, and then all of a sudden, the person next to you, his head just turns into jelly. And then all of a sudden, I don't have an arm anymore. So it's a horrible thing. But there are certain persons, they have some military leaders, they have the power to motivate people. Yes, go, fight for your country. Yes, we shall do so. So Hitler was very powerful, and the German people, they all followed him. Previously, they would never have thought to kill Jews or anyone else. Who are the officers in the German army? They were, you know, bank clerks, teachers, doctors. They were what you would call ordinary people. But they took instruction from their Mahajan, and then they were prepared to fight and kill and torture and all kinds of things. So mostly people are followers, and mostly people don't think very deeply about what they are following or why they do so. Just like I was giving that example, that young girls nowadays in India, they like to wear tight jeans and t-shirts like this. So I doubt if any of them who do so thought very deeply about why they're doing so. What will be the effect of doing so? But whether it will actually benefit me in the short term, medium term, or long term. But just they see it's advertised like that, and others are doing, and they do. And most people are like that. All these fashions, simply they make some fashion and everyone follows. That's how the fashion business works. It's a very big business in the West. They bring out all different fashions, and then everyone buys it. All the different style of clothes and shoes and different hairstyle becomes in fashion, and people follow. Not everyone, but those who are dedicated followers of fashion, they like to, they'll go along, whatever's fashionable, they'll alter their hairstyle this way, that way, the other way, their clothing, because people don't think, most people don't think. And therefore, the Shastra enjoins us to think. Manishi, we're inclined, we're advised to be thoughtful. Now sometimes it's talked about blind followers of religion. Just it's in the book and you follow. But devotees or thoughtful persons, they are advised, if you're actually intelligent, we should take direction from Shastra. because we cannot ascertain reality by ourselves. So we should accept there is some higher authority that has the highest knowledge, and we should seek that out. So we can find that in Shastra, but we are advised not to blindly follow. We should try to understand as far as we can with the intelligence that God has given us. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that we doubt everything, because as Prabhupada quoted in the previous purport, that those who are faithless, ashadadhana purusha dharmasyasya parantapa, aprapya mang nevartante mrityu samsara vartmani, those who are faithless, they cannot make progress in devotional life. They must fall back. Because we can, at every step, we can ask, why this, why that, why this, why that, and there has to be some faith. Otherwise, we can't make any progress. If we question everything, then we can't make any progress. If someone says, well, I don't believe in anything. You believe in something. When you're hungry, you eat. You believe that by doing so, your hunger will be mitigated. When you're eating, you don't, I want to check if it's not poisoned. You know, you just eat. You have faith that it's not poisoned. Which usually it isn't. Almost always it isn't. You have enough faith. So we have to have some faith. If we're breathing, if we think, oh, someone might have released some poisonous gas into the atmosphere, stop breathing. We can't do anything if we don't have some faith. We can't breathe, we can't eat, we can't walk. So you must have some basic faith. So devotee means they have basic faith that there is higher reality, the Supreme Person, that He is benevolent, and that by following His instructions as given in Shastra, we can realize Him. So that's a reasonable faith. Just like most of science, people say, well, it's all proved, but most of it's just faith, and a lot of it's not very... A lot of it's rank speculation. Just like they presume there is so much unseen matter, dark matter in space, because otherwise, where does all the gravity come from? It's just presumed, no one's proved it, and it's not provable, but they just presume so, because otherwise, how do you explain gravity? How do you explain that the planets are staying in motion? So it's a guess, which is accepted on faith. There's absolutely no proof whatsoever, but they've guessed so. And it's called science, but it's not actually science. It's just a guess, and they believe in it. It's called blind faith, actually. But they don't have any better explanation. They didn't think of any other explanation. So, even a lot of what goes on, just like it's generally presumed, it's taught that the brain functions by relaying of charges between the neurons. But there's no proof of it. It's just presumed. No one's ever proved it. But it's presumed so, and it's taught like that. So it's faith. This whole evolutionary theory, it's not science. No one's ever demonstrated that man has descended from monkeys or anything else. But it's just presumed. Big Bang theory is not proved, but they go on talking as if it's a fact. It's just faith, that's all. It's not science. Science means they should be able to demonstrate it. So those who say that religion is just a kind of faith, yes, that's true. But it's reasonable faith, and it's certainly no less reasonable than the faith of those who say that everything has come into being by chance. That's really blind faith. Because if we make a hypothesis that everything has come into being by design, it's actually a much better hypothesis. Because even if we think that even the most simple cell in our bodies, if we think it could have come into being by chance evolution, it seems very... there have to be so many preconditions. And even then you can't explain how there's life. So the idea or the hypothesis that there is God and that there are multiple souls is actually it's a much better guess, even scientifically speaking, than what they call the scientific theories. But one thing they've, again, we see, it's our hypocritical demons that they talk science, but they won't even begin to accept that there could possibly be any dimension beyond that of matter. So that's not scientific. But it's practically accepted that science means material, study of matter only. But science, if it's supposed to demonstrate what is reality, then or describe what is reality, then it should be, if they can't explain, if you want to explain in material terms, that's all right. But if you can't, then why not accept that there may be other dimensions of existence that are not conceivable by any material means? And that by definition, they say, well, we can't see spirit, we can't see Atma in a microscope or any other scope. And we can't prove it by mathematical theories. Therefore, it doesn't exist. This is foolishness. Because by very definition, you'll never see the Atma under any scope or by any mathematical formula, because this is all material. And Atma, by definition, is spiritual. That means it's not under material laws. So it's not possible to find by any material means. But it's possible to find out by spiritual means. But because they're atheists and demons, they will reject this in the name of science. But it's not scientific at all. It's just dogma. We shouldn't be fooled by dogma, atheistic dogma, which is covered with euphemisms such as science or humanitarianism or humanism, morals, ethics. People tend to get misled. Kamsa, it was very clear he was a demon. But it's more difficult in the modern age because the demons are posing as nice people. Very good people. People who are interested in the uplift of human society. For the benefit of India, we must promote abortion. Otherwise, the population will increase more and more. Well, I've got another suggestion. Don't engage in illicit sex. That will control the population. That will control the mind also. That will be much better. And you won't get AIDS either. You see, in the AIDS, they want to control, use condoms. But how about no illicit sex? They don't promote that. Why not? Because they're demons. You should go on with all sinful activities, and when the result comes, which is very terrible, AIDS, they don't make much noise about it now because what to do? It's already like an epidemic. And they don't want to tell people that you just live like a gentleman. So they're making all the use condoms and this and that, but that's not going to stop. It's not going to stop the spread of AIDS. But what is really required, that we people live a civilized, self-controlled life, that they want. In some countries they're doing, actually. And they've found it's much more effective than telling people to use condoms in countries where they have some values, in the Philippines. They're telling that you just stick to your wife. Don't go running here and there. And hope that your wife doesn't go running here and there. And then there won't be so much spread of AIDS. But they don't want to say. Because they're demons. So they're advertising big campaign. We're benefiting India by making a campaign against AIDS. Why don't you make a campaign against degradation of human society by illicit sex? But rather they're promoting the opposite. They're promoting homosexuality, lesbianism. And at the same time they're saying, be careful of AIDS. Isn't this hypocrisy? They're saying, we want to punish the rapists. This rape should be stopped. It's very bad. But at the same time, they're showing all pornographic movies, practically pornographic. And they're encouraging the girls to dress in such a way and put on toenail polish and all these things to try to attract men. And going out without any escort or just freely moving here and there, joking with young men. And they're thinking that they're doing everything required to attract men. And then there's rape case and he should be punished very severely. Rape is increasing. Very bad. But they're doing everything to incite lust. And then why will you be surprised if there's more sexual crimes? And so many crimes, sexual harassment at the workplace. Why the women are at the workplace anyway? They're encouraging that why should women not have, they should also have careers. Why should they be deprived as if it's something wonderful to slave in an office for 10 hours a day? The men, they have enough work to do, but they're thinking, you should also have the right. They're cheating. They're cheating the women by saying, you should have the right to work. Why do you want to work for? You think the men want to work? They're only doing it because they need to maintain their family. It's not something wonderful. Oh yes, we also want to go to work. We also want to slave at the office or do some job. And this way, all their wrong ideas, and then the whole family breaks down because they don't want to have children, and then they have children, and then the women are too busy working, and there's no one to look after the children, and they're at the workplace, and they're flirting with the men there, and it's all crazy. The whole modern society, all mad ideas, all wrong ideas. They're so puffed up, they think that, well, previously the whole society, they were primitive, but now we're very advanced. So now we've given equal rights to women, so they can go and mix up with all different men and get raped and all these things. So it's very advanced society. And never mind, we have all these diseases, but we're working on the cures. Sorry, you're dying of cancer, but anyway, never mind, because in future we'll find a cure for someone else, not for you. So a very hypocritical society in which they purport to be acting for the benefit of others. But actually, the whole society is set up so that everyone becomes a paka demon. And when people become demoniac, then they can't think clearly because they're thinking, how is their thinking? Pravritting cha, nivritting cha, janana vidura suraha, na shocham na picha charo na satyang teshu vidyate. Because they don't study Shastra, because they don't follow Shastra. Therefore, they do not know what is proper behavior and what is not. That is the symptom of a demon. Those who do not know what the Shastric injunctions are and how to follow them, they are called demons. And therefore, they are unclean. Ashocham, they don't behave properly. That means according to Shastric directions. And they do not know what is truth. They are far removed from truth. So, Krishna conscious movement, it means to give people clear knowledge of how to live and act in this world so that we may be elevated. Tasmat chastram pramanante. Karya. What is that? Tasmat chastram pramanante. Karyam. Karya karyam avastita. Gyatva shastra vidhano to. Amihar hasi. Time for a little entertainment. Just like on this Atma TV program, I watched it once. You have devotees speaking Bhagavad Gita. To Indriya Daman Karna Chahiya. Then you have the break with all the dancing girls. And then again, we go back to Tapasya Karna Chahiya. It's kind of, you know, variety. Anyway, these are very serious matters. That the whole society, it's very much degraded and misled society because they don't follow Shastric injunction. They think we have a better idea. They reject Shastra. And often we find that our devotees, especially in the last few years, it's like they want to be devotees, but we'll chant Hare Krishna, but everything else we'll do according to the modern society. All the ideas, even we find, I was told that some devotees, they even believe in Darwin's theory, which is, how can you be a devotee if you believe that? But I'm told that they have the idea that, we accept the spiritual part of Shastra, but other things we have to accept according to modern science. These are very dangerous ideas. If we think that, well, Shastra has only got something to tell us about spiritual things, but material things, nothing. That this is what's in Shastra, that was for some old time and it doesn't apply now. If we think like that, that is very dangerous. Of course, some things that may be true, that it doesn't apply now. It doesn't apply now because we're so fallen that we can't follow it. But as much as possible, we should, in our dealings, in our social setup, we should follow the Shastric model because that is meant for our uplift. But unfortunately, we are more inclined to listen to the sweet-sounding demons who very politely lead us to hell. And that's the difference between modern demons and Kamsa. Kamsa was a demon, just out and out, straightforward. There's no doubt about it. But the modern demons, in the name of scientific progress, education, career advancement, development of the nation, and so many different high-sounding, what's that word? I can't remember. High-sounding statements, they're leading us to hell. Development of the nation, we need more slaughterhouses, more discos, more bars. This will increase the economy. It's all good for the nation. And everyone should be a good citizen by slaving their life away in some job so that the economy can develop and you can also get some money so you can afford to eat more meat and drink more wine and go on holiday to Singapore and all these kind of things. So a misguided society. Very much misguided society. So our devotees, they should be very clear about this. that we can't be half demon and half devotee. It's not possible. It doesn't work. Our life has to be wholly dedicated to acting for the pleasure of Krishna, whatever ashram we're in. Householder means devotee means devoted to Krishna. So, if we're at all ambitious for our children, we should be ambitious that they become pure devotees of Krishna. Just like there was one devotee, he was studying at medical school. And he asked Prabhupada that, well, should I continue or should I join? Prabhupada said, there are so many doctors, but they're not preachers of Krishna consciousness. Come. Of course, I know you have a different policy here, and I'm not necessarily against that policy, but I'm just citing the example that Prabhupada said, there are so many doctors for the body, but where are the doctors for the soul? So his family might have thought that, well, it's a great waste. All these years you gave education, he got that, he could have become a good doctor. But Prabhupada saw that what is the real need of human society is teaching people about the real goal of life. There are so many doctors to tend to the body, but however many, even if a man is rich enough to have his own team of doctors waiting at his beck and call with all the best medicines in the world, still he will get sick and still he will die. Whereas, if we can get knowledge of Krishna, surrender to Krishna, then that will save us from repeated birth and death. So, faith in Krishna consciousness, it has to be very firm and deep faith. If we can see through the eyes of Shastra, as Prabhupada did, he laughed at the whole world. Of course, that was with compassion. But he laughed at the foolishness and taught, and in this way taught us to see how all the endeavors of the materialistic society, their space research, medical research, their Olympic Games, their cricket matches, their building universities, their developing the economy, you add it all up together, and it comes to a big zero. All useless. That's being generous. Actually, it's minus, but just to be a little generous to them, we'll say zero. All useless. Everything that we may do in this material world, it's all useless without Krishna consciousness. That understanding should be there. Hare Krishna. By pretending that the daughter of Yashoda was Vasudeva's own child. So in that way he was crooked for Krishna. Otherwise, in general, this crookedness is a disqualification in devotional service. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu listed among the upashaka, or weeds, that obstruct the luxuriant growth of the bhakti lata, he said, nishidacha kutinati jibe hingshong lab puja pratishta jata upashaka gan. So he listed kutniti in Hindi. Kutinati, as this duplicitous behavior, as one of the obstacles in becoming Krishna conscious. So for Krishna's service, we may be. But for our own aggrandizement, that is not good. Everyone in the material world is doing like that. How to win friends and influence people.
Be nice to others so you can extract some benefit from them. That's the essence of that book. For my own sake, I'll pretend that I like people so that they will trust me and then I can get some advantage from them. Who is the author of that book? Dale Carnegie, right? How did he die? Suicide case. How to win friends, influence people, and commit suicide. That is a book of how to be duplicitous. Bestseller. I'm okay, you're okay. Another bestseller. Ham chup tum bhi chup. That's the same thing. You do all nonsense, I won't say anything. Then I'll do all nonsense and you don't say anything. This is called tolerance among the demons. Such tolerance is demoniac. Then?
Talking about Darwin's theory and other scientific notions, when we study them, we see that they're actually totally, as you said, blind faith. But how does this go on?
Is this sound coming through? Can you all hear? Any no's? All right.
The scientific ideas like Darwin's theory or Big Bang, they are not even science. As you said, they're just guesswork. So how is it that...
Well, it's educated guesswork. They don't just say there was a Big Bang, but they write big books about it. So it seems as if they're... It seems convincing because they write so much about it and they give theories and calculus and this and that.
So how is it that the scientists get away with this sort of things? It's even a person with a little common sense can understand that it is nonsense.
So well, how most do they people get don't have it? Common sense. It's not a very common thing, actually. What's called common sense is remarkably uncommon. Just like I was saying, people follow fashions. Because everyone dresses in one way, they also dress in the same way. Because everyone starts wearing some kind of earring, they also wear. Where's the sense in that? There's no sense. But people do, because everyone else is doing. Gadale kanyai, sheep. Sheep, just one sheep goes, all the others follow. Why? It's foolishness. That is the state of the conditioned life, covered by Maya. The tendency to follow without following who we should actually be following, Krishna, then we follow all different rascals. We also become a rascal. Then others follow us. It goes on. It's called Andha Parampara.
You are telling that a devotee should be simple. So in the process of becoming a simple devotee, how we can live our crookedness?
Simple means we simply accept Krishna. But we shouldn't be so simple that we're fooled by tricky persons. We're dealing in a world of crooked persons, but we should have the clear, simple vision to understand this is all cheating. What is that? Shate shatya shatchama charit. We should, when dealing with crooked persons, we should also be not so foolish that we are cheated by them. How to become a simple devotee? Well, if you're not, then you wouldn't be here, would you? Simple means to, instead of filling the mind with so many different doubts, we accept, yes, Krishna. Sarvam etadritang manye yang mang vadisi keshava. That is simplicity. Whatever you say, Krishna, I accept, Arjuna said. Not blindly. Arjuna didn't accept blindly. He had plenty of questions and he had doubts. But his doubts were not to have. You see, Prabhupada explained there are two kinds of questions. One is to understand Krishna, one is to avoid Krishna. So just like Arjuna asked Krishna so many questions. Katame tad vijanayam tvam ado proktavaniti. How can I understand that you spoke to Vivasvan? But he didn't say, well, this is all nonsense, I don't accept. He said, how can I understand? He didn't say, I reject. So the basic faith should be there, that there is Krishna, we are his servants. On the basis of that, we should proceed. Please pass the mic to the back.
Hare Maharaj, Krishna. While preaching, we tell the people that Lord Sri Krishna is the supreme controller. He controls everything. But their counter argument is that in their daily life, they see that so many demons, they control the things. Like suppose somebody wants to get a job, then he has to have some reference, some jack somewhere to get the job. So they observe so many things in their daily life, so that how they can actually see that Lord Sri Krishna is the supreme controller. Actually all these demons
you can see through Shastra. But we say Krishna is the supreme controller, that doesn't mean there are not other controllers, there are sub-controllers. Ishvara Parama Krishna. There are sub-controllers. But that there are sub-controllers suggests there's a supreme controller. This world is basically systematic. If it were not so, then we couldn't study anything. The study of any subject means to study certain patterns, isn't it? Science means to study what are the laws governing the interactions of matter. So if it were not, if it was not systematic, if it was not regular, then we couldn't study. And if we didn't think in a systematic way, then we couldn't study. So that the whole world is systematic suggests that there's a supreme controller. To say that it's come into being by chance is actually quite illogical. So yeah, we don't say there are sub-controllers, yes. There may be the controller of an office. There's a very small controller. He doesn't actually control, but has some measure of control. There may be the controller of a family, maybe a controller of a country, but the supreme controller is Krishna. That's all.
Few devotees, after practicing of Krishna consciousness for so many years, still they are not able to give up Mayavad philosophy or worshipping Mayavadis.
Then they're not devotees. Devotee means not Mayavadi. Can't be devoted to Krishna if we give any credence to Mayavad.
They chant 16 rounds, but they keep Mayavadi's photo in their home and they offer flowers to them also.
Well, if you like, you can go there and rip out the pictures of the Mayavadis and throw them away. If you invite me, I usually do that. Then after that they don't invite me again, but anyway. It's actually very offensive to Krishna to make a show of bhakti, but at the same time to maintain attachment to Mayavadis. So before people are initiated, there should be a home inspection. What's going on in the home? They're coming here and seeing Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari and then going home and worshipping some Mayavadi. No initiation. They shouldn't be initiated. The essence of initiation is
dedication to Krishna, surrender to Krishna. The essence is not 16 rounds of four regulative principles. The underlying principle is that of surrender to Krishna. So the four regulative principles and 16 rounds, they are necessary for surrendering to Krishna. But if we chant 16 rounds, follow four regulative principles and worship Sai Baba, that is not bhakti. That is offensive. So such person should not be initiated. Not in this sampradaya anyway. We should see.
Maharaj, it is said if at all someone wants to control...
It is said by who?
In Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada writes, right, to control our... control our tongue, we should have Krishna Prasad and speak only Krishna Katha. One aspect is very simple, to have Krishna Prasad. But the other aspect of talking Krishna Katha, when it comes to dealing or talking with devotees, interacting with devotees, Krishna Katha rarely comes. What all comes is just something mundane topics.
Really?
Which are not directly related to devotional service, maybe like somehow indirectly today. So how can...
Well, why don't you speak Krishna Katha and then others will at least have to reply to you. And if by this end of the first sentence they again go to mundane topics, then you reply with Krishna Katha.
That's what we say. At the time of interaction, Krishna Katha... What we say? The main problem is at that point I forget Krishna Katha. Or rather, it's very difficult to...
Well, then you can remember this little question and answer session and think what to do. There, living in this world, there may be many things that we discuss which are apparently not related to devotional service. Just like, for instance, fairly often I discuss with devotees. I don't go into great depth because I'm not very interested in computers, and I have the privilege of being able to give my computer problems to other people to look after. But I may discuss with devotees something about computers because I use computer as an integral part of my service of writing books. So he may discuss about this, that, this drive, that drive, and how many gigs, and this and that. But it's all related to devotional service, because I'm not in the slightest bit interested in computers per se, but because I need for my service, then I discuss. So it might sound, I'm just giving an example from my own life, it may apply in other devotees' lives in a somewhat different way. So it may sound that we're just talking something mundane, but because we're doing so to facilitate service, ultimately, therefore it's not mundane. There's a very interesting anecdote of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was in Assam, traveling and preaching, and they were going in the bullock cart, and another bullock cart came alongside, and there was a young boy, about 14 years old. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said to him, "What is your name? Where are you from? Which village? This, that." And they passed on. The boy gave the reply and he didn't say anything else. "Who are you? What is your name? Where are you from?" Nothing. He didn't say chant Hare Krishna, no such thing. But the impression of seeing and speaking with this great Mahapurush was such that that boy shortly afterwards left home. Well, leaving home in itself isn't such a wonderful thing. But he left home and came to devotional service. And he's actually became a very prominent preacher of Krishna consciousness. So even the apparently mundane talk of a great devotee, because
Tomara hridaye sada Govinda Vishram, because Krishna is always fully manifested in his heart. So even the apparently mundane words of a great devotee are surcharged with the spiritual potency to change people's lives. Whereas we find so-called preachers of Harikatha who are actually materialists, just like these people who do Bhagavad Sapta. I'm not saying anything against Lokanath Maharaj's Bhagavad Sapta, because just a few days ago in Bombay the question came up, should we be doing or not? And I was saying, yes, this kind of Bhagavad Sapta is wanted. But Prabhupada was speaking against the materialistic people who do so for maintaining their family. So this kind that Lokanath Maharaj does, that's very good. I'm all for it. But this kind of cheating Bhagavad Sapta, where their aim is not to glorify Bhagavan, their aim is to fill their belly and to collect umbrellas and all this kind of thing, which they sell back to the shop. The umbrellas get cycled from, they go to the Kataka, they go back to the shop. Then another guy comes and speaks on so-called Bhagavad Katha, and then again they all get sold and they all get given to him as a gift and they sell them. You know how this goes on? Because in Shastra it said you should give a devotee things like umbrellas. And so they give so many, they collect so many umbrellas, and what are they going to do with so many umbrellas? So they sell them back to the shop wholesale, and in this way they go the umbrellas. I saw once, I was for some devotion, for some service, I was sent once to see this Kanchi Shankaracharya, Chandrasekharendran. So I saw him, I was waiting to see him, and so many coconuts were offered to him. And when there was a big pile, they brought them outside, sold them to the shop outside, and again the same coconuts were bought and again they were offered. So like this, anyway, I got a little bit off the subject here. This is Prajalpa, maybe. So Bhagavad Katha, they're doing, but their aim is, although they'll speak, oh lala, and they'll sing some songs with harmonium and cry a bit, and but their aim is not, their aim is to collect money. That's why they have to put on a good show. And that's why people think, that's a good speaker. Oh, that's a good speaker. That one's not so good. Judging on how much it, we judge who is a good speaker depending on how much it entertains me, how much it satisfies my senses. So they've polluted the whole path. The whole subject of Krishna Katha has been polluted by these rascals. So they're speaking Krishna Katha. No one will ever surrender to Krishna in millions of years by hearing them. Rather, they will become less inclined to surrender to Krishna by hearing such persons. Even though they're speaking Bhagavatam, supposedly, whereas the apparent Gramya Katha of a great devotee that can change the life of a person because it's infused with Bhagavat Shakti.
We say in a Vedic life, the purpose of Varnasam system is to please Krishna, but along with that, when the whole society, they feel that sense of protection being in the system. But as we say in today's Krishna consciousness, because not being having that system of protection, and we see that even the devotees also, they go for such a demonic aspect of today's civilization, that going for higher education and all those things. So even the devotees, they give this reason that because society is like that, so you know, we have to.
Therefore, they surrender to Krishna. Take protection. There's no protection at Krishna's lotus feet. That's the ultimate protection. But kshurasya dhara nishita duratyaya. It's a razor's edge. We can come this side to Krishna or the other side to Maya. I'm not wholly against, you know, and it's just, I'm not saying everyone should become a caveman or something like that. Just like one devotee, he was an accountant and he was doing preaching also, but he told me that if for some months I decrease my preaching somewhat and spend more time studying, then I can get a higher degree, and then doing the same amount, after that doing the same amount of work every day, I'll earn significantly more income. So he asked me what I should do. I said, go for the study, it's a few months, you're a young man, you have a family. So these are, so I'm speaking principles here. It may be that we do make some adjustment to the modern society. Just like I told about the devotee who was studying medicine, Prabhupada said, just leave your studies and come to join. But I don't necessarily preach to people. In fact, I generally don't tell them to do that. It's, but the principle, I'm saying these things to demonstrate the principle of understanding that Krishna consciousness is our only real need. How we approach that real, how we approach that real need living in society today, that may be by a somewhat indirect method. That may be. But we should be very clear. Just like, for instance, if a devotee goes for so-called higher studies, it may be that by doing so, that his financial position is improved, whereby, because anyway he's going to work, so then he can maybe save and retire earlier, or make more donations to the Krishna conscious movement, and look after his family in a manner that's more pleasing to them, old parents, this, that, the other. So if he does that higher studies but keeping Krishna very clearly as the goal, that we're not bewildered thinking that I become a better person by having a better degree or something like this. Or if he doesn't think that actually it's a requirement. But if everything's in perspective, then it may be undertaken. The point is to keep everything in perspective. How to apply these principles in our day-to-day life, that we require personal guidance.
Foreign companies are outsourcing projects
for
to
what?
India.
Sorry?
Foreign countries, they are foreign outsourcing countries. Their projects to India.
I'm sorry.
Foreign
I'm
countries.
Sorry. But just hold the mic.
Projects to Indian companies.
So I'm sorry, I can't follow. Outsourcing.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I'm working in one of such outsourcing company backup office. So
can
I get
they hear
a
you at the
sometimes.
Back now? Maybe you moved it too far away. Excuse me.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Like who are non-devotees?
Yeah.
So
it's not only foreigners who are non-devotees.
In my Indian company.
Okay. Yeah.
So I get a feeling that if at all they would be devotees, I could be a very better condition in the same place. But there is no facility as such that the people who are working outside nowadays, because all of them are, most of them are foreign projects only, where our devotees are working nowadays. So in such conditions, that feeling
well,
is...
Therefore, Prabhupada wanted these, he very much wanted these rural communities where devotees can live together and chant Hare Krishna. Because if we are taking a salary from non-devotees, then some way we have to be compromised. It's very difficult to well, it's not possible actually, because if we're working for non-devotees, then we have to do what they want for at least, well, for a large part of our lives, and work on their terms and conditions. So therefore Prabhupada so much wanted that devotees can live on the land, simple life, without so much stress and anxiety. Austere life, no doubt, in some ways. But by doing so, we'll have time to chant Hare Krishna, we'll have that association by which we're encouraged to do so. So if we... A lot of preaching goes to devotees how to live in the modern world. But actually Prabhupada's idea was that we just cut out. Live according to our own terms and conditions. That was Prabhupada's revolutionary idea. Because it's not at all favorable for Krishna consciousness to take money from people who are engaged in grossly sinful activities. It's not favorable to associate with them in any way. We feel ourselves forced to do so. But Prabhupada gave the alternative. If we have the courage, we can take that up.
Maharaj, we have seen that even if it was started, such communities, but it has not been successful. Even off late also, like communities, even in Maharashtra got stopped. Means why then it's happening?
Well, but the attempt was there, and Prabhupada gave the idea, so it can be successful. We should have the faith that Prabhupada knew what he was talking about. We shouldn't think it cannot work. That would be offensive to Srila Prabhupada if we think it cannot work. So if it didn't work, that means that we didn't properly follow what Prabhupada said to do. Isn't it? Because there's nothing wrong with what Prabhupada said. So we should find out what we did wrong and then do the right thing. So we may say it's a failure, but then material life is always a failure. It's just that we think we're being successful because we're defining success in the terms of the non-devotees. But in terms of chanting Hare Krishna, it's not a very good program because we don't have time. We need in the morning at least 4 to 5 hours of sadhana, but none of our grihasthas do that because they don't have time. And we're supposed to associate with devotees, but we spend most of the time associating with non-devotees because of economic constraints. So it's always a failure. So certainly to set up such farm communities will be a struggle, and we may make some mistakes. But someone has to do that, pioneering. If Prabhupada hadn't gone to the West, then none of us would have come to Krishna consciousness. If the first devotees in the West hadn't taken that risk, then the movement wouldn't have grown. So someone has to take the risk for the sake of ourselves and for future generations. Just like, how was America founded? Because so many people went from Europe to America because they wanted to practice their religion. The founding fathers of America, they went there because they wanted to practice their religion in an oppressive atmosphere, because they were being oppressed in England, in Holland, in Germany. So they went to America so that they could, because of their religious belief, that we want to go to a place where we can practice our religion unobstructed. And they went. It was a great risk. They didn't know what was going to happen. And they just had virgin country, and they had to They could take the land, but it was virgin country, and they had to start their lives anew. But they did so on the strength of their religious commitment. So that kind of commitment is required. If at all we're going to establish these farm communities.
And just to add a little bit. In this case, if you see, like spiritual master, when he gives an instruction, like Prabhupada, even though he risked his life, but it was confirmed that it is coming from a spiritual master, the instruction. So in that case, if you see, like, no, even from Krishna, the descending process of this, what you can say, propagating this Krishna consciousness coming from Krishna himself. But there is no direct instruction, like, you know, that this is how you should start, like, you know, as you say, farm communities, or, like, you know, there is no system which is coming in parampara itself and which you pick up.
Well, Prabhupada has given the instructions, and people have lived like that for thousands of years. So, like I say, if you expect that everything will just be given to you on a plate, it's not going to happen. It requires some devotees to take the risk and do it. If you complain that no one's there to do it, someone should set it up and then I'll take it up. But with this attitude, then there can be no progress. Someone has to take the risk for Krishna. Someone has to do the work. Someone has to study the system, see what's to be done. Prabhupada would never accept such a statement. No one is there to do it. Prabhupada would say, you do it. The thing is that due to modern education, we have this Shudra mentality that I have to get a job. Shudra can only be employed. He can't think how to be independent. He's afraid of being independent. Whereas Vaisya, Kshatriya or Brahmana, they will never be dependent. So it's like that. We're thinking someone has to set it up, then I will fit into the system. This is Shudra mentality. We have to rise above that.
Maharaj, I just wanted to ask regarding writings about our realizations, that Prabhupada told some specific instruction for the devotees to write. What is the specific reason behind writing the books?
Reason for writing the books is to give knowledge of Krishna of Krishna and Krishna consciousness. For a devotee, writing is kirtan. It's glorification of Krishna and the process of devotional service. About the 10th verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, very early in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada wrote that it is the foremost duty of one in the renounced order of life to make a literary contribution for the uplift of society. Foremost.